Hello and welcome to the Food Connections podcast, the podcast that connects you with the food you eat. I'm Dr. Laura Wyness, a registered nutritionist with an interest in all things related to food and nutrition. I love learning more about the food we eat, how it's made, and getting to know the people involved in making our food. In this episode, I'm joined by Professor Bauke de Roos from the Rout Institute at the University of Aberdeen. Bauke has spent over 25 years at the forefront of nutrition science, conducting dietary intervention studies, showing how nutrients, foods, and diets influence cardiovascular and cognitive health. She's a prominent researcher in the area of sustainable nutrition and food systems, and one of her main interests is modelling food systems and human health outcomes, especially in relation to seafood consumption. She's published many papers, including recent ones that have looked at how seafood production and supply chains in the UK could be better aligned with consumption levels and dietary recommendations of fish. So whether you eat fish or not, I'm sure you'll find the fish facts in this episode really fascinating. And there's some fantastic suggestions at the end for how to include more seafood in your diet. I hope you enjoy listening. Welcome to Bauke de Roos. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining the Food Connections podcast. It's great to have you on as a guest. And I think talking about fish and all your research and being an island nation, I think it's a really good topic because fish sounds like it would be a staple in our diet here in Scotland, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So I'm really interested to talk to you about our fish consumption here and its nutrition and health impact, as well as how sustainable it is. So before we get into all that, I was just wondering if you could share a little bit about your background, first of all, and how you started your nutrition career and kind of what your research interests are.
So I did my master's and PhD in the Netherlands a long time ago, at least it seems a long time ago. And obviously that got me really interested in the whole nutrition area. Initially, I focused more on mechanistic research. So I have been interested in omega-3 fatty acids for a long time, but probably more from a bioactive perspective. And once I did my PhD, I came to Scotland. I worked at a rural infirmary for a little bit, specializing in lipid metabolism. So I looked at effects of omega-3 fatty acids, for example, on lipid metabolism. But increasingly, I got more interested in actually the food we're eating. I joined the Rout in 2001, so I've been there for a while. And actually, fish is really interesting, as you alluded to in your introduction. Fish is interesting from the fact that the health benefits, as we have known from omega-3 fatty acids, are probably because of fish. And as we have moved through the evidence that appeared in the last two decades, it's actually probably the health benefits are more even stronger for fish than they are for omega-3 fatty acids. And obviously realizing fish is not just omega-3 fatty acids, it's a lot more. So at the moment, I'm actually just focusing on fish as food mostly, probably from two perspectives. On the one hand, I'm really interested in the area of personalized precision nutrition. So like who could benefit most from fish, like what works for whom basically, and can we identify who will be most responsive to fish in relation to some of its health benefits, like lowering triglycerides, for example. But my second area has become also a lot more prominent, and that's probably because of Scottish government funding, is what does fish mean in terms of our whole food systems? If we're looking at healthy and sustainable food systems, what is the role of fish in that? And that is increasingly becoming important because we're all interested, obviously, in healthy foods. The Scottish diet is not that healthy. But increasingly, we also want that food to be sustainable. And fish does actually provide more nutrients than many lead-based protein alternatives at a much lower carbon emission cost. So I can see perhaps in the future, our diets will hopefully contain a lot more fish.
Yeah, no, fascinating. And I mean, the fishing industry is a big industry in Scotland. How much or how available is the local fish that we have?
Well, like it is actually really available, but demand for fish is very low. So we're producing an awful lot. We are actually producing a lot of pelagic fish, like herring and mackerel. We are producing a lot of salmon. It's one of our main export products, mostly in fish farms in the West Coast. but we're exporting most of it. And we're exporting it for a reason, because demand is relatively low. Demand for our own local produce is relatively low. So if we're looking at supply, and supply is actually a product of what we're producing and what we're importing, and then what we're exporting. So if we add together what we produce and import, and then we subtract what we export, we hem our supplies. Supplies are low, but that's because we're exporting so much. And supplies are about half of what we should be eating from a health perspective. And it's not that I think our businesses are just key to export everything. Export is good for a country, right? So don't get me wrong. But if demand is relatively low in the country, that means that they are exporting to countries that are perhaps willing to pay more for their produce. But interestingly, so we are producing a lot of salmon, we're exporting most of it. But then the salmon we are consuming, we are importing most of that into the country from Norway, for example. So we have some very good trade balances for fish. And basically, everything we produce, we almost export. And then what we're eating, and that is the big five, so that's cod, haddock, salmon, tuna, and prawn, we're importing them mostly from other countries. And again, imports is not necessarily a problem. It stabilizes kind of food supply, but it can also be a risk. Obviously, when we are depending on trade agreements, or when things happening like Brexit, then suddenly imports can become a bit more problematic. And there is an ethical issue as well. We are importing fish from more tropical countries, like prawns, for example, where we actually take the fish away from those countries, where they could because those countries often have more malnourished people than we have. So there is an ethical issue as well. We're taking that away because it gives the country an economic boost to export the fish, but it is then subsequently not available to their population. So there are lots of different elements we can consider when we're talking about which fish we are eating and whether it's local or whether it's not local.
Obviously, you were saying the demand is low here. What is the reason for that? How has consumption of fish changed over the years in Scotland from, you know, were we eating more fish 20, 30, 50 years ago compared to now?
Yeah, well, I think from the moment we started really measuring food intake, and I can think about our nutrition survey, the NDNS survey, for example, fish has been relatively stable. We have had dietary guidelines for a while for fish consumption since the second report in 2004. And the guidelines are very clear. They're actually different for the UK and Scotland. So in the UK, it's eating two fish per week, of which one should be oily. In Scotland, they say you should eat one oily fish a week. But despite these guidelines being there, we haven't really been increasing our intake. And we're currently eating only half of what we should be eating from that perspective. But there are some other issues as well. We've seen, for example, if you are living in a lower socioeconomic group, your fish intake is only half of the higher socioeconomic groups. So people, especially people in very low socioeconomic groups, they're hardly eating any fish. And then if they are eating fish, it's often white fish, which doesn't have the same nutrient content in terms of omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D, for example, than oily fish has. So demand is particularly low in the low socioeconomic groups. And has that always been the case? I'm originally not from the UK, but like the stories of the herring wifeys traveling along the coast of they are amazing. So they would come from Shetland or near Aberdeen, going all the way to Great Yarmouth, where their husbands would take the fish in from the sea and they would do the salting and the preparation. And I've heard stories of women that were traveling and they would be at local, what we now would call Airbnbs, it was called differently at that point, I suppose. And they would bring actually their own potatoes with them, and then the herring come from the sea, for example, and they would eat herring and potatoes 5 days a week. So, but it was also considered a poor man's food. So there has been a culture of more fish consumption, but I think it was a very coastal phenomenon. It was especially the people that live near the coast that would have access to the fish. And and that has gone, obviously, at some point, the herring stocks in the sea, they vanished. That was 1940s, 1950s. And since then, it has been reinstated. I think the number of herring now are much higher than it used to be about 50, 80 years ago. But our demand for fish has not returned from that perspective. On the other hand, we have seen a huge increase in the farming of fish. Like think salmon. And in terms of oily fish, salmon is currently one of our most popular oily fish and is consumed quite a bit. But then it's considered expensive. And we did actually do some research on that. And we looked at, if you look at chains in demand, like what are factors important for that? And we actually found it is not the price. So price doesn't determine demand, but it's actually household income and taste. And you may say, oh, household income, that sounds very similar. But it's not. I think that has to do, again, with these low socioeconomic groups that have a low household income. They hardly eat fish or they never eat fish. So they don't develop a taste for fish either. So that means that even if we make fish cheaper, it doesn't increase demand. Because if you are in a low socioeconomic group, you've never eaten fish and you would not do it, even if the price would have. So I think we have to look at different ways of increasing demand. And that's going to be my big research interest in the next couple of years. How are we increasing demand, especially in those groups that hardly eat any fish? And you could argue that the health benefits would be highest for them.
Yeah, gosh, I mean, interesting about the recommendations that we should be eating. Did you say two portions of fish a week or at least one oily fish a week? And you mentioned like young people getting used to eating fish, and the school food standards, I believe, they state that oily fish must be provided at least once every 3 weeks. What's your thoughts on that? To me, that sounds quite low. Should it not be a little bit more?
Yeah, and no, absolutely. There is a reason for it, because the recommendation is like one fish a week. And the argument was, well, at school, they only get one lunch. So it's one of three meals, basically. So divide one oily fish in three, and that means once every 3 weeks. But the thing is, like once you are at school, often there is an alternative as well. So there may be fish on the menu, but there may be pizza or something else. So we know that it's not necessarily increasing fish consumption. But we have been speaking with people involved in those dietary guidelines, for example. We even did a salmon in schools experiment. We were in six Stirling and Stirlingshire schools. And we managed to get salmon that were produced at the West Coast into the schools. So we had catering teams producing nice meals with the salmon. And we did see a slight increase in uptake, but that was mostly from children that were eating fish already, perhaps on other occasions. And we had a bit of a focus team research going on afterwards, speaking with the dinner ladies, speaking with the teachers that give perhaps the health, nutrition education at school. And I think that's where it needs to start, right? The teachers need to know why fish is healthy and why it is a healthy and sustainable choice. But also kind of talking to the children, which I thought was quite revealing, because we did different dishes which we thought children would like. And they said, well, actually, if only you would have just brought in smoked salmon or sushi, we would have eaten it. So thinking about that is actually, if you look at sushi, for example, that has really increased in popularity amongst teenagers. Even from children from households that are not naturally eating a lot of fish at home. So it is possible. It is possible to increase fish consumption through new trends. And even if you think about it, sushi is raw fish, right? You would think that is like one of the most extreme ways to offer fish to children, but it works. And I think if you can then align with TikTok trends or social media, then that may definitely be a possibility. So I'm still hopeful that there are perhaps, and that's something we are discussing with the fish industry as well, are there ways perhaps that we can reformulate fish, that we can offer fish in different ways to people so it's easier to prepare for them, or they can perhaps even eat it cold and no need for heating or preparation, for example. And looking at tinned fish is a really nice example, because tinned fish used to be kind of tinned mackerel or tinned sardines, but nowadays they come in sauces, you can put it on toast, you can put it through salads, you can put it in pasta dishes, and it's actually really tasty, and it's not that expensive either. So, and then you've got the tinned fish date night, which seemed to be one of these things on TikTok as well. So again, aligning with current interest of especially the younger people, because fish consumption is lowest, if you look at NDNS data, is lowest in that group, is in teenagers. So if you can actually increase fish consumption in that group especially, that would be great, because they may actually get used to eating fish and then continue with that habit and when they grow older.
Is there a difference to kind of buying fresh fish, tinned fish, frozen fish, or are they all kind of good in terms of nutrition and from a sustainability point of view?
Yeah, so generally fish is healthy, and whether you can it or you're having fresh fish or frozen fish, the nutritional composition is not that much different. Obviously, when you smoke it, you increase the salt content, so you have to watch that. But if you eat it occasionally, it's absolutely fine. Obviously, there is the issue with one of the main reasons people may not want to buy fish is the smell of fish. And actually, speaking to fishermen, they say when they're out fishing, they will have herring for breakfast every morning because it's just fresh out of the sea. That's the most delicious way to eat the herring. And they would not eat it from the supermarket. So there is a difference in taste in having it fresh. But remember, a lot of fish will actually land frozen on shore. And then perhaps being processed, being canned, or being delivered to the supermarket in a frozen manner, or being fresh. So I think it doesn't really matter too much. It's whatever your own preferences are and whether you are happy cooking fish or whether you would prefer actually getting it in a more processed way.
So obviously you're a nutritionist as well. So can we talk a little bit more about the nutrition aspects of fish, and what would you say are the kind of key nutrients that fish provide us with?
So I think the most important one is a protein food, right? And that is perhaps slightly less important for us in the UK because our diets are not necessarily protein deficient. But I do a lot of work in developing countries as well, like Bangladesh. I've got a research program there. And for them, fish provides like quite a significant part of their protein. So again, looking at the ethics of getting the fish away from them, it is actually really contributing to their protein intake. And if you look in India, they can get proteins from certain meats, for example, because of religion, and then fish becomes really important. So yeah, protein is really important. It is a protein source. And I think this is important also to remember, because as we are perhaps moving towards more sustainable diets, and we may have to, or some of us may have to reduce their red meat intake if you're eating a lot of it, fish could be a really good substitute. But obviously, fish also has got a lot of other nutrients. So it is a really unique source of omega-3 fatty acids. And obviously, I am aware that some plants can have omega-3 fatty acids as well. Then that would be the alpha-linolenic acid, which fish will have EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid, then DHA, which is docosahexaenoic acid, which are really unique to fish. So you can get them in plants, although increasingly, I think we are reformulating foods and we may have some of these fatty acids in other foods in the future as well. So, and these have very unique health benefits, these omega-3 fatty acids. So, and I think the benefits for the EPA and DHA are stronger in the literature than the alpha-linolenic acid, which doesn't mean that omega-3 fatty acids from plants are not healthy. They are really healthy too. There are really unique health benefits to the EPA and DHA. So that is important just also because fish is such a unique source.
And is that just the oily fish that have the omega-3s, or just white fish as well?
Yeah, so it's mostly an oily fish, obviously. And I think that's why the Scottish recommendation as well is really focusing on oily fish. But there is a little bit in white fish, and there's a little bit in mussels as well, for example. And we've done a study where we had people consuming increasing doses of mussels, and we saw their omega-3 fatty acids increasing in their blood as well. So other fish contain omega-3 fatty acids as well. And then it obviously depends how many fish you eat per week. So that is important from a fatty acid perspective. And then we have a couple of important vitamins. So we've got vitamin B12. Really, fish is a really important source there. Vitamin D. And then vitamin D is mostly, again, oily fish. And I do have to say, you would actually have to eat a lot of fish to get to the recommended intake of vitamin D. Obviously, we get most of our vitamin D from, we make it ourselves through sunshine. But especially in winter, especially in Scotland.
Especially in Aberdeen at the moment, yeah.
Especially in Aberdeen, even, we don't make any vitamin D. So then we're either completely dependent on supplements, or yeah, eating more fish would be really helpful as well, because not everyone is taking the supplements. And it has been shown in countries where fish consumption is high, like Iceland or the north of Norway, for example, that the dip in vitamin D that we see in lots of people, especially in as north up where as we are here, that dip is actually less severe. So you are able, with fish consumption, to make that dip in vitamin D to attenuate that to some extent. So not completely, but it does help. So vitamin D is important. And then it also provides other micronutrients like iodine, selenium, zinc, iron, and calcium, not so much here because we're not tend to eat the bones. But in other countries where you have the small fish and they would eat the small fish with the bones, it really contributes to calcium intake as well. So these are all important nutrients to our diet, especially for subgroups, think adolescent girls, think elderly people. So from that perspective, fish can be really important to nutrient intake.
Yeah, certainly I work a lot with kind of perimenopausal women and thinking about bone health. And often I mention, if you like, the fish with the soft edible bones, like the canned sardines or the pilchards are an excellent source of calcium for supporting bone health. But so quite a range of minerals and vitamins and, iodine as well. I was doing a report on dairy recently and there's very few kind of iodine sources in the diet, dairy being one and fish being the other.
Absolutely. And so obviously they have been reviewing the evidence from studies where people are eating fish, but then also probably a lot more studies from where they've looked at omega-3 fatty acid supplements, for example, because initially we thought perhaps it is the omega-3 fatty acids giving these health benefits. But if you summarize the event, all the studies, and we often do that through systematic reviews and meta-analysis, we find that actually that there are very clear health benefits for eating fish. So it's reducing the risk of mortality. So if you eat between 2 and 4 fish a week, so we call that moderate consumption, that reduces the risk of dying from heart disease by 21% on average. So that's quite substantial. But then if you look at the evidence from supplement studies only, so no fish, just the supplements, and there have been 2 meta-analyses in the last 8 years or so, who are actually very clear that the effects from the supplements are really not that strong. And it may well be that a lot of the participants in the trials are nowadays on statins as well. So the omega-3 fatty acids may not add that much extra benefit. But actually, it does show that it is perhaps not just the omega-3 fatty acids. It's the whole package of protein, the vitamins, the minerals. And also, there may be a displacement effect, right? If you're eating fish, you may eat less of something that is more unhealthy, like very processed red meat, for example. So, but there are definitely benefits in getting the omega-3 fatty acids as part of a fish package rather than the supplements.
Supplement, yeah. It's always nicer just to eat foods so focused on the diet first. And I think there is something about that food matrix or the combination of nutrients in a food. Like, for example, you're talking about the vitamin D in fish and then the omega-3 fatty acids. So vitamin D being fat soluble, maybe it's better absorbed from fish because you're having that fat alongside the vitamin D.
Yeah, and there is actually evidence that the omega-3s you're getting from fish are better absorbed than you get from supplements. And the matrix effects is obviously important, as well as just it being part of our eating culture, which is always important, rather than just depending on supplements.
So we've talked a little bit about nutrition. So what about the sustainability aspect? So that obviously there's increasing attention now shifting towards a more sustainable way of eating and a healthy way as well. And is fish, would you say, a sustainable food choice?
Yeah, I think so. So the way there are different ways to measure sustainability. And one of the ways we can do is just looking at carbon emissions. So if you look at meat consumption, like we know that red meat is one of the highest carbon emissions. That is mostly due also because cows are emitting methane, which is even stronger than CO2 in terms of having a climate impact. So if you look at fish, actually, and I already said it earlier on, it probably provides perhaps more nutrients than some of the land-based protein alternatives, but at a significantly lower emissions. I think we're in the same range perhaps as chicken in terms of carbon emissions. So it is a lot more, better for our environment. And it's probably one of the main reasons as well that the E-Lancet report and also the recent update is focusing on reducing our red meat intake and then increasing our consumption of especially the oily fish. And as you know, the E-Lancet has done a lot of modeling on optimizing diets based on their nutrient profile, more recently about more cultural background as well, but also reducing carbon emissions. So we have actually looked at this quite extensively also within our research group, because being funded by the Scottish Government, they're very interested, obviously, in this sustainability aspects as well. So we did recently look at sustainability risk in addition to nutritional performance and also self-sufficiency. So self-sufficiency is kind of how self-sufficient are we in producing a lot of it rather than being dependent on imports. And we did it across 23 seafood species that are consumed in the UK, some more than others. So they were covering 122 supply chains and just looking at the global, we're trading with so many countries. So we are actually getting this fish from 39 different countries. And we found that the best performing species that were locally produced, mussels actually absorb CO2. So they are almost carbon neutral, probably one of the best fish you can eat in terms of sustainability. Salmon, and again, the small pelagic, so the herring and mackerel. So in addition to them being really nutritious, so they have got they are oily fish, so they have a high levels of omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D, vitamin B12. They are also making the least carbon impact, basically. And they're providing us with a lot of the omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin B12 as well, but also selenium, phosphorus, and protein, obviously. So from our perspective, it would be really interesting. If we want people to eat more fish, then they should be eating this fish, right? Rather than all the cod and haddock we are importing from other countries. And sometimes people are asking me, is Scottish fish healthier or more sustainable than the fish we're getting from Norway or any other part of the world? And that's not necessarily always the case. I think the salmon we produce here in Scotland may not be that different from the salmon that is produced in Norway. And then transporting fish, transport obviously is linked to carbon emissions, but not significantly, not an awful lot. But I always argue, actually, eating salmon that is local, or herring or mackerel, is actually you're supporting local industries, right? So you're giving them a salary, they're able to buy good food for their families as well. So from that perspective, eating local fish could be really beneficial rather than supporting farmers elsewhere. And if you talk about sustainability, if you talk to fishermen, that's what they call sustainability, is to keep our own fishing fleets in operation, basically. So from that perspective, it's important to think about that aspect of sustainability.
Consumers as well, going shopping for fish, I mean, one of the things I often say to people is to look out for the MSC label. Is that a good thing to look for? That kind of gives assurance that it's a sustainable option.
Yeah, and it is actually a really important label to look at, because obviously we've had overfishing and we really have to make sure that that is not happening again. We are monitoring our fish stocks much more rigorously than we've done before. There are very clear guidelines on a per country level. But sometimes there are issues, and I can talk about one issue, which is the mackerel, which has lost its green label and then also its amber label. And does that mean we don't have enough mackerel? Actually, there's still quite a bit of mackerel in the sea. But after Brexit, the different countries that are fishing the North Sea for mackerel, they have not agreed. So there is a quota for mackerel in that bit of sea, but the countries have not agreed which part of that quota is theirs. So because of that disagreement, they have consistently been overfishing. And that's why the Marine Stewardship Council downgraded that label, and for the right reasons, because it was really to get those parties across around the table again. Can you please make an agreement on your individual quotas? So, but for us, it's a bit problematic, because we would actually like people to eat more mackerel, because it's a healthy fish. It is a sustainable fish. So everyone would just stick to their quota. So we are working actually very closely with them. And I recently gave a keynote lecture at their ceremony event in October as well, to celebrate the sustainable fish that is being landed in the country. And there's some fantastic choices for us. And actually for people to look at the label is really important, because collectively we then make sure that we're eating those fish that can be sustainably sourced as well.
Gosh, there's a lot to think about there. And obviously you've done a lot of research already on it, and it sounds like there's a lot more to find out in future on this topic. So fascinating area to work in, I'm sure. I mean, what would be your, I suppose, dietary tips for those of us who don't eat fish much at all, or or it's just not on our plates? Because you mentioned that obviously demand is not great for fish. So what would you suggest for people who are new to fish or don't have a lot of fish and want to increase their fish intake? Or have you got any dietary tips?
Well, interestingly, I didn't eat fish until I was 23, 24 or so. So my parents never, I come from the north of the Netherlands, like there was no fish on the menu where we were. So I'd never eaten fish. And then I actually went to the Philippines to work at their Food and Nutrition Research Institute in Manila for 8 months. And they just eat fish. That's all they do. And I thought, well, this is me. And there's a really interesting anecdote. I arrived in Manila. They took me to a restaurant and I got a bowl of soup. And then that soup floated the front half of my fish. And I thought, oh my gosh, now I have to start eating fish. And so I got my spoon and I put it in the soup. And then the eye of the fish kind of popped out and started floating next to the fish. And that was my first introduction.
Straight in at the deep end.
And now I'm eating fish probably 3-4 times a week. So I think even if you're not used to it, there's definitely a way to get to enjoy fish. So I would say whenever I go out for a meal, go to a restaurant or somewhere else, if there's fish on the menu, I choose fish. Because it's often the healthy option. And also, it is a really nice way of being introduced into different species and see what you like. So try a fish in a restaurant. Don't be afraid. And somebody else will cook it for you and probably do it well. And it's a really nice way to get introduced to fish. Just be brave enough to choose that option rather than thinking, I'm not sure if I like it. Just go for it. And then I think there are alternatives. So first of all, people think it's difficult to cook. They may not know how to cook it. There are actually really good recipes online. It's relatively quick and easy to prepare fish. It's much quicker than some other meat sources, for example. And yeah, if you have like white fish, for example, it's just so easy to cook. But there are also other ways of putting them in pastas or salads. We already talked about tinned fish. You could just open tinned fish like a mackerel and put it in the salad, for example, or put it in a pasta. And the same with sardines, anchovies, put it on your pizza. They are relatively easy ways to prepare fish, and perhaps not even directly for a main meal, but like mussels, for example, you can fry them and put them on toast. It's just like, this is probably one of my favorite lunches of my children. So they are really quirky. It doesn't necessarily need to be a main meal. You could just do it for lunch. You could put it in salad or even in a pasta sauce, right? People are quite happy making pasta sauces, but then putting some fish in it rather than some mince, for example. These are easy swaps and actually are not tasting too fishy. And a lot of people may like it that way.
Oh, some great ideas there. And as you say, it's kind of the ultimate fast food almost. It's a quick meal if you're having a quick lunch or don't have a lot of time. Yeah, mussels on toast. Yeah. What do you think, like health professionals, what could they do to help encourage people to eat more fish? Or is there anything that maybe the food industry could be doing more of, like chefs or food producers, for example? What would you to see them doing, or what could they do to encourage more fish?
It's always good to have fish on the menu, right? So whenever you go to a restaurant, and I do tend to go to fish restaurants because I really like, but other restaurants, they should really make sure there are fish options on the menu so people can choose them. In terms for the industry, I think we probably have to look at new ways of presenting fish to people. And it's a bit of a shame because there is a lot of coverage in the media, especially about ultra-processed foods, which gives that type of foods quite like a bad reputation. But not all ultra-processed foods is necessarily bad for you. And I think there are perhaps ways that we can process fish into different in different ways. So it makes it easier for people to include it in their diet. So at the moment, I think tinned fish is brilliant. And often it is processed because it may come in a sauce, but that doesn't mean it is unhealthy. So I think we have to look at perhaps new ways of processing fish that are what makes ultra-processed foods having a reputation is often because it's high in salt, sugar, and fat, but it doesn't need to be, right? So preparing options that are not necessarily high in salt, sugar, and fat for people to incorporate in their main meals, in sauces, on toast. Hopefully we are able to make it more available to people in an affordable way, because that makes sure that we are getting, especially those that are living in lower socioeconomic groups, they can actually benefit from the health effects as well. And I think we may have to look at how we present fish to elderly people, perhaps in care homes. And I've had these discussions already with people, and I hadn't realized, but if you're in a care home, one of your biggest fears, or when you're living on your own, but you get food through social care, one of your biggest fears is actually choking. So people often don't choose fish because they may be scared that there's bones in it and may make them choke. And so we really have to look at options where we can be 100% sure there's no bones in fish. Or even with 3D printing of foods, there are opportunities there as well, for example. Yeah, so I think the processing is something we really have to focus on in the next couple of years. How can we deliver fish to people in a different way that is suitable for how they live, what they like, and what they're able to cope with, like if you're elderly, for example.
Yeah, no, lots to think about. And definitely, yeah, the choking on a fish bone. I've done that myself as a kid and it put me off fish for quite a while. But yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. Yeah. So I wondered, to finish off, we've talked a lot about kind of fish dishes there. I'm starting to feel a bit hungry now. But what would be your kind of favourite fish dish, or do you have one that you're kind of go to? You mentioned mussels on toast earlier.
I like halibut. It's just one of the things that is available in summer. It's a really nice fish, not too fishy. It's not there all the year round, but it is really lovely. So if I'm in a restaurant and there's halibut, I will often choose that. So yeah, interestingly, recently, I was always a bit aware of oysters, whether the consistency, whether I would like that or not. So I hadn't really tried that a lot. But recently I was in France and somebody invited me to a raw fish restaurant, and they said there were raw mussels, but there were also oysters. And it was given with French vinaigrette and it was absolutely lovely. And again, it shows that even though I do eat a lot of fish, like sometimes you just have to be bold and try it. And the oysters were absolutely magnificent. So, and again, oysters are so rich in micronutrients. So like that is one of the fish that we're producing locally in Scotland. And hopefully people will try it a little bit more. I like scallops as well. If I'm going to fish restaurants, I live in Huntly, so the Murray Coast is obviously a place where we go quite often for a meal. And we often have scallops there, fresh scallops, which is great, especially I really like it on like with black pudding and applesauce or chorizo. It's just they're really nice combinations that combine perhaps the fish with something else that gives it a really unique, perhaps sometimes even Scottish taste. So yeah.
So you must live on the northeast coast near Cullen. Are you a fan of Cullen skink at all?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Fish soup. Although I don't eat a lot of fish soup, but if I'm there, I would often go to one of their restaurants and have a proper Cullen skink. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be one of my go-to comfort foods. I would say the Cullen skink soup or mackerel salad type thing. And I only kind of realized recently that, you know, fish is seasonal as well. I never really considered fish to be in season or have a season.
Well, mackerel is only kind of brought to land in October and January. So although it is available all year round, but then it is kept in big freezers as well. So we have a year round supply, but if you really want the fresh fish, then yeah, there are certain months that it will probably taste just that tiny bit better because it is so fresh.
I was listening to another podcast just the other week. It was the On Farm podcast, and it was they were interviewing Christopher Trotter, who's the Fife food ambassador, who's sadly passed away last year. But it was him talking about locally produced foods, and he was talking a lot about the coastal waters and the fish that we have locally. And one of his cookbooks, Coast and Waters, it's called, the British Seafood Cookbook. I think it's a fantastic book because it's all simple recipes with different types of fish and seafood. And it just kind of, I think, really useful to encourage you to try different fish and not just, as you say, the cod and haddock, but yeah, oysters. There's a couple of recipes for oysters and mussels and all sorts. So yeah, I think, as you say, just experiment, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely, go for it. And you may be amazed. And even though, although I'm a huge fish eater, I'm still amazed by the great taste of some of the fish we are actually landing in Scotland and in the UK.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been fascinating diving into the world of fish. And yeah, I think I've got fish on the menu tonight, so I'm looking forward to that now. But yeah, it's been fascinating, and we'll look forward to reading more about your research that you're doing on this topic. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this Food Connections podcast. Do check out the show notes for some really useful links related to this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to me if you could give the podcast a rating and leave a short review. It would really help others discover the show. If you know someone who might enjoy this episode, please do share it with them. And if you have any comments, guest suggestions, or if you'd like to sponsor the podcast, do get in touch. Thanks again for listening.